Ready? Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Today is the third day of the session. I guess you're having a good time at Tagget. My name is Vijay Kumar. I'm a senior product manager for Office 365, and I'm pleased to be joined here by John Oluck.
I'm a senior program manager with Windows Azure Active Directory.
So we're here to talk about a very important topic, which is Office 365 identity management. As you know, this is probably this is very critical because this is the entry point to any service identity. So there are various options that you can use to use for identities based on the infrastructure that you have in your organization. So we're going to be talking about a lot of the options that we enable. And things like that. By the way, this is an overview session, and this afternoon, Jono and Girish, and I'll be joining them too, we'll be talking in more depth about Windows Azure identity systems and things like that. So before we get in, what is the agenda today? So just basically giving you an overview, and recently we made some pretty important announcements in this space that are probably of very interest to you. And then we'll discuss several identity integration options. I'll also share with you some of the work that we've been doing with the partners. So there is some critical information there. Okay, let's talk about the identity management, just a little bit of overview. Let me ask a question before I get into this. How many of you know that Office 365 uses Windows Azure as the identity platform? Great. So identity management, the way we talk about it is, two important aspects, authentication and authorization. Basically, authentication is just verifying who the individual is, or a computer or device or whatever is asking access to the service. And the second thing is authorization. So what kind of authorization do we give a user or a device? Just a little bit about Microsoft Cloud Services, just so we are all on the same page. We have two types, right? Consumer services and business services. For various reasons, we like to keep them separated. And what we have is two different types of identities. One is the Microsoft account, which you may be aware of. You may be calling it Live ID or Hotmail ID or what have you. Now we are calling it broadly Microsoft account. This is what you would use to log into Outlook.com, consumer SkyDrive, or Xbox Live, and things like that. Right? And then we have Windows Azure Active Directory, where as opposed to Microsoft account, we call it organizational account. So with this, what you have is your organizational ID that you have created in Windows Azure. With this, you would access services like Intune, Office 365, Dynamics CRM, and other business services that Windows Azure offers. Right? It's pretty important because in terms of trust topics like security, privacy, compliance, etc. We keep these two things separate, so we can give you all of that stuff that you need for the enterprises, whereas consumer is more for your consumer services. So again, just to stress, we do use Windows Azure Active Directory as the platform for all of our enterprise services or business services. Great. So Office 365 identity. Now, with that as the background, now we have various different options that we can offer with identity, right? So first of all, you can use cloud identity, which means you create your own organizational identity in the cloud. For example, contoso.com, you have it, you register your domain. Now that becomes user at contoso.com. You log in directly into the cloud, and we authenticate you and we authorize you to use Office 365 services. This is good for typically small organizations that are starting up. You don't want to have your own AD and any other infrastructure like that on your on-premises, and you just go to the cloud and use everything there. The second option is directory synchronization, which is, let's say you have some directory infrastructure on-prem, like either Active Directory or IBM, Tivoli, or what have you. Any of those directories that store your identities, then you can synchronize them to the cloud using directory synchronization, right? Now you have the same identities on-prem and the cloud. We'll get into each of these things in more detail. We also recently announced password synchronization. We'll talk about that as well. The third option is federated identity. Same as second option, you have complex infrastructure on your on-premises with AD and or non-AD stuff, and then you want to have your organization in Windows Azure as well, but you want to use the same identities and passwords. This is what you would do. You would use either Active Directory Federation Services or one of the other identity providers to federate between your on-prem and Windows Azure Active Directory. So this also gives you, you may be familiar with this word, single sign-on very well. And this is what will give you single sign-on. Basically, you will get, what we do is we authenticate you. You get authenticated on-prem, and you pass SAML token to Windows Azure AD, so you're automatically authenticated into the service. The important couple of things that we announced recently, we just released a preview of active authentication, multi-factor. This is a very important security feature. As you know, people are always trying to, either malicious reasons or what have you, they're trying to get into your organizational systems. So passwords can be easily compromised. So we offer this multi-factor authentication now. We recently acquired a company called PhoneFactor, and we've integrated into Windows Azure so that you get to use multi-factor for Office 365 and other business services. Right? So what is basically, how do we authenticate using multi-factor authentication? We have three different options. We have mobile apps. We can use mobile apps, phone calls, or text messages. So we have mobile apps for Windows phones, iOS, and Android. So basically, what you can do is you can either send a text to your using SMS. You can authenticate as a second factor. Or you can have a push notification so that you can push hash on your phone and you get authenticated. Or you can get this random code generated on your phone every few seconds that you can use to authenticate into the service. I have a brief demo. I'll get into it in a little bit. Or you can even have it on your landline if you register your landline as your second factor. What you can do is you can have the service call you and you can pick up the phone and press hash. You get authenticated into the service. So basically, the concept here is the two factors are what you know and what you have. What you know is your password. You use it and you get into it. And what you have as the second factor, so nobody is trying to pretend like to be who you are and then getting into the service. A little bit about the architecture, the way it's designed is. Basically, you, as a user, you sign in from any one of the devices that's shown on the left-hand side at the top. You enter your password, and I'll show you in a little bit. Windows Azure Active Directory authenticates you into the customer, tries to authenticate you. And if you have enabled second factor, so basically what happens is your user must authenticate using your phone or what have you, or a landline, and then you get into the service. Right? Let's do a brief, let me show you how this thing works. So I have Office 365 portal here. First, I'm going to log in and show you how you enable multi-factor authentication as an admin. waiting for it to log in. Once it logs in, basically I'm going to go to the Azure portal. Basically, this is the platform portal where you enable platform features like multi-factor authentication or password synchronization and things like that. And then once this loads, I can show you that, look, it shows that I have registered for phone factor trial. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to go into Active Directory. I'm going to go to one of these users. And as you can see here, I can just, with the click of a button, I can enable multi-factor authentication. It's as simple as that. I can enable multi-factor authentication for a small fee. You do get the service. So, and now let's see how exactly you can go ahead and use it. I'm going to log in as the user that I just enabled. That's my first factor. I'm entering my password. Now, when I'm going to try to sign in, as you can see, it says for added security, we need to further verify your account. It's asking for a verification. So I can use, these are the options I have. I can use verification code from my mobile app. I can ask for it to notify or text me or call me, right? So let me go ahead and use this one. So I need a code. Let me switch so I can show you my phone. So this is the app we have for Windows Phone. The same app is available for iOS and Android. I just go to that one. And as you can see, it's giving me a random code that keeps refreshing. Now let me go back to the screen. I'm going to enter this code, 364. If I'm not fast enough, it's going to refresh again. Oh. 559259. So there you go. That's a little bit about two-factor authentication. Just wanted to give you a sense for what it's like to use it. As you can see, it's fairly easy, and it's available for preview now. It's only available for admin accounts, by the way, and later on this year, we're going to make it available for all users. That's about active authentication. Now we're going to go through some Active Directory provisioning updates. These are pretty important updates. And John, I want to take over.
Yeah, for sure. So first of all, you may have heard yesterday at the introduction to Azure Active Directory, we have what we call the Graph API available to our customers. It's a REST-based API, gives you the ability to access that directory information that you have behind your Office 365 tenant, your users, your contacts, your groups. This also allows you to build your line of business applications in the cloud instead of on-premises. So if you had built line of business applications on-premises, you probably used LDAP, authenticated with Kerberos. In this new world, with Azure Active Directory, which is your directory in the cloud, you'll be using REST and OAuth as your authentication mechanism. Out of curiosity, how many folks have actually used the Graph API or tried out some of the sample apps that we have? Okay. So trust me, it's very powerful, it's very useful, it allows you to build sort of any type of workflow you would have once provisioned on-premises, but now you're no longer having to be deploying that on-prem, right? If you have partners that want to use the same type of workflow or application, hosting it on Azure Active Directory takes all the extranet and all the security concerns that you once had to account for off your plate. You can also build what we call multi-tenant applications. So if your company has an expense approval workflow, when I submit my trip reports, like you probably will when you get home, that's what we sort of think of as a single-tenant application. It's for me, for my company. You can also provide other customers with functionality and services as well. So you can host functionality and have multiple other customers of Office 365 or Azure AD use that service as well. We call that multi-tenant because you're hosting the app and you're actually working against multiple different tenancies. All that information, all the information about that is available online on MSDN. So feel free to take a look at that. There's some sample apps on how to get started. And we think that there's a lot of opportunity there for you to build some great value into your business. The next thing we've released is what we call the Azure Active Directory Connector for FIM. So I'm going to stop here and ask a quick question. How many folks are already running DirSync today? So you're synchronizing your on-prem AD up into the cloud. Okay, so you may be aware DirSync is for a single forest, single Active Directory forests on-premises. How many of you have multiple forests on-prem or even non-AD directories on-premises? Okay, great. So that's what this is for. This is effectively the way you will be able to synchronize multiple on-prem AD forests up into the cloud. We'll take questions at the end if that's okay. No, FIM 2010 R2 is the actual name of the synchronization engine. Yeah, R2, because it's a couple of years later, but that's a great question. So this is the technology you can use to synchronize multiple on-prem forests. I'll dig into this in a lot more in this afternoon session. It's OUC B341. I think there's a link in this room, actually, at 315. We'll talk about how to deploy that and some of the information for sure. I should correct this. The public beta actually starts in July. Early July, because it's the end of June now. It'll be available on the Connect site, and so it's freely available for any customers that have FIM already. Just grab that, download, and you can get that configured. But I definitely will stop here and talk about password sync for a couple minutes. First of all, who here has deployed single sign-on by ADFS or some of the other supported STSs? All right. So one of the big asks we've gotten from a lot of customers is ADFS is expensive. It's hard to deploy. I need to set up hardware. You know, I need to manage that hardware. Well, what we've done is we've provided you now with an alternate option. And the next slide talks about some of the trade-offs between single sign-on and password sync. So I'll make sure you know we get that taken care of. But if password sync is good enough for you, it's just part of DirSync. So that means you can get it from the Office 365 portal for free. The key thing here is when we say password synchronization, we're not actually synchronizing the plain text passwords. We're synchronizing a hash of the hash of the plain text password. So from everyone here should be familiar with the fact that a hash is theoretically a non-reversible one-way function, right? And so we've rehashed that multiple times to ensure the maximum security of your user's passwords. The main point here is the hash itself, even if someone intercepts or breaks into our system, can't be used to access anything on-prem. It's effectively useless. And so that's why any time we deal with this, it's the hash or the hash of the hash, never the actual user password itself.
So, John, can you clarify how our some of our competitors
absolutely.
It or how we differentiate?
So a lot of other who here is using a password synchronization solution from some third parties? I know MessageOps is one of them. There's a couple that are out there, right? So what you may have noticed is you had to install some software on your domain controllers. Those are called password filters. It's a DLL that gets plugged into AD. And how those work is they actually intercept the plain text password as they're being set by the user. So, for example, if I hit Control-Alt-Delete in my Windows, and then I try to change my password from 12345 to 123456, what'll happen is Active Directory will realize you installed that software and pass the password as it is in plain text through the software. And then if it's good, the software will package that password and push it up into the cloud. So what that means is that software that just ran actually got to see the plain text password, right? There's a potential, I'm not saying they do, but if the software's compromised or if anything else is going on in there, they have the ability to possibly use that plain text password. The way that we've engineered this is, I'm from the Azure Active Directory team, we own Active Directory, we know Active Directory best. And what we've done is we've plumbed it so that this DirSync tool talks to Active Directory as a domain controller. It's a fully documented API, but it's really ugly, unmanaged code. So that's why we built it for you. And so we never see the plain text password. We only get that hash. So the first time we see it, it's already in a form that we can't even use in your on-premises network. That's one of the guarantees we wanted to make to you, that we could never get anything that could be usable. And if compromised, the malicious party couldn't use that string as well. And so that's definitely one of the big differences here between what we're currently calling password sync. I'm trying to rebrand it to be simple sign-on, meaning as a user, it's the same username and password in both my on-prem environment and the cloud. So it is different, though, than some of the other password sync solutions that are out there today. And again, I'll dig into that a little bit more in the afternoon session, which is focused on directory synchronization and identity. And as promised, the question always comes up, well, why would I want to use password sync instead of ADFS or single sign-on? There's a couple things password sync gives you that ADFS or single sign-on solutions give you, a couple things that it doesn't. First of all, obviously, because we're synchronizing hashes of passwords, you get to log in with the same password. So 12345 on-prem, 12345 in the cloud. The way we've built password sync, we defer to you as the AD administrator for your password policies. So you may have built in complexity policies, history requirements, and all that in your on-premises Active Directory via group policies or whatnot. The way that we've built password sync, we say, okay, you know best. Because you get to define those policies on-prem, and we just pick up the hash that results from a successful change, that means that your user's passwords in the cloud are the same as your user passwords on-prem, and those must adhere to your password policies. So that's a double-edged sword, because if you have no password policies and allow a single-character password on-prem, well, we're going to allow a single-character password in the cloud. But we felt that this was the best way to give you maximum control of what password policies you want to see, because we do have a very limited subset of policies you can control in the cloud. We do, as Vijay pointed out, have support for a particular 2FA solution based on the phone, right? An app, a text message, or a phone call. ADFS gives you a lot more support. You can use custom 2FA providers like RSA keys. You could require sort of login via UPN first. I'll talk a lot more about those this afternoon. But suffice it to say, you get some 2FA support with password sync. You get a significantly larger set of support via ADFS. Where you start to see password sync fall over and ADFS pick up is when you really actually need single sign-on. Single sign-on meaning I type my username and password in once, don't ask me again, right? That's the first entry, and then no longer should I have to enter my credentials. Password sync doesn't give you that. Password sync, like I said, is simple sign-on, meaning every time I get prompted, I don't know or care if it's on-premises or the cloud, I'm using the same username and password. So it gives you that. ADFS prevents the next prompt from coming up with the asterisk behind that of Outlook. If folks are on Office 365 today and you use Outlook, you notice the basic auth prompt that comes up. Password sync doesn't solve that problem for you, nor does ADFS. But we're working on that, I promise you. The last feature actually that ADFS really gives you is what we call client access filtering. So sometimes you may want to have a policy that says, look, I only want users of mine that are in this IP range, my corporate network or my partner's corporate networks, to be able to authenticate and authorize to use Exchange or some other service. So it's a decision based on the location via IP address of a user. Well, ADFS gives you that because you can build in custom logic to sort of say, if in this range or outside this range, deny. Password sync doesn't give you that. And the last thing that we just want to call out here is, with password sync, your users are actually logging in against the cloud, right? It's not that we're doing single sign-on where we ask them to go on-prem. They're logging into the cloud. It just happens to be their password's the same. With ADFS, they are actually going to log in, as Vijay mentioned, against your ADFS or ADFS proxies to get that SAML token, which then gets them into the cloud. And so this is kind of a great point to jump into a couple of the different options that we offer for how to integrate. The table goes from left to right and really speaks to sort of the simplest all the way to the right, which is sort of the most complex. Complex can be the hardware required, the configuration required. And so I'll touch on these real quick and then hopefully give you an idea of what you could possibly do depending on what you need. And again, I'll be digging into this a lot more this afternoon, so I don't want to take up too much time here. So VG already mentioned the first column, cloud identity. The pivots that we often talk about these decisions on are how big is your company, right? How much work do you have to do to manage and maintain that directory? What we say often is sort of where do you control the object? Where do I go if I want to change the department or the phone number for a user? We often talk about hardware requirements, right? This is, do I have to get another server? Do I need another VM? And finally, what's the login experience? What do my end users see when they try to access the service? So first column, cloud identity. Because everything's manual in the cloud, I have to add users via the portal or upload that CSV. We usually say it's for smaller companies. You do not want to be sitting there at the console typing away for tens of thousands of users. And also, it gives you the least control of the information in the directory. So if you think about sort of a user that's using Exchange Online, there's 57 attributes in Active Directory, and therefore Azure Active Directory, that are Exchange specific. You know, what type of recipient is this? Is it a conference room? Is it a user? You can't control that via the portal. You don't need new hardware, though. This is just using your web browser. So there's definitely a time and place for cloud identities only. But users log in with sort of their separate username and password from what you might have on-prem. The next couple here are DirSync. As Vijay mentioned, this synchronizes your on-prem Active Directory up into the cloud. There's slides with a little more info on each, so I'll hop into those for details. Password Sync, we just talked about, synchronizes passwords from on-prem to cloud. Graph API is sort of that programmatic interface, so you can build your own solutions to manage information in the cloud. If you don't like DirSync, or you've invested in infrastructure on-premises already, you have a custom system that provisions information, you could use the Graph API to push that into the cloud. You don't have to use DirSync. And the last one here, FIM. FIM speaks to the multi-forest or complex sort of scenarios where I've got a couple forests on-prem. I have a non-Active Directory service on-prem. And then single sign-on is the federated identity option, and Vijay will definitely talk about that more.
We'll get into these slides.
So. Okay.
Yeah.
So as before, cloud identity. This gives you access to all the Office applications. It's the easiest to deploy because there's nothing to deploy. You use your web browser, using Office 365, and you're done. The main thing here, obviously, is our service is fully supported. It's highly available. We have an SLA and a guarantee. So you get all the goodness of that for free.
One thing I do want to mention here is you can actually get, use all your rich Office apps. I mean, I'm sure you're probably aware, but this question often comes up. Can I use only web browser with cloud identities? Obviously, no. That's not alone. I mean, you can use any of your rich apps like Office, Pro Plus or SharePoint Link, Exchange, et cetera.
Absolutely. Anyway, that's one of our design principles as well, is you should be able to use all of our software with any of our options. The second option here is directory synchronization, or DirSync, as you may have heard it. Again, this really aims to simplify your management experience. You're already spending time in your on-prem AD to add users, remove users, keep groups up to date. DirSync makes sure that translates into the cloud, makes that same information available in the cloud. DirSync by itself doesn't give you single sign-on. DirSync can give you password sync. And so, switching over to that, this again is a feature of DirSync. If you've downloaded the DirSync client after June 3rd, you probably have noticed it's a screen in the configuration wizard. It's just a checkbox. You check that checkbox, we're going to start synchronizing passwords for your users. It gives, again, what I call simple sign-on, meaning the same username and password. It's not true single sign-on. Stop here real quick and just mention, a lot of customers have said, I don't want to synchronize my entire Active Directory into your cloud. I don't need that there. I may have some partners I don't need in the cloud. I may have particular staff members or departments, legal or HR. We do support what we call scoping and filtering of DirSync. There's a TechNet article out there that provides the prescriptive guidance for this, but you can scope objects based on three pivots. So you can select which AD domains are going to synchronize to the cloud, and this is done by checkbox. You can specify which OUs within AD synchronize. And finally, you can filter out user objects based on attributes that are syncing. A very common one, going back to the legal or HR department, is if a user has a UPN, a user principal name, like @legal.contoso.com, filter them out. So you have some control to control which objects are going to synchronize to the cloud.
So if I'm a school, if I have different departments, so I can choose which department I want to...
Absolutely. Again, based on these patterns, you can select which set of user objects will synchronize into the cloud. In the session this afternoon, I'll touch on it here, because you mentioned schools, it is possible as well that you have an aggregate Active Directory on-prem. I've got three campuses right across the country, but I'm using one Active Directory. But I want three different tenancies. I don't want one big tenant. Well, we actually support that now with DirSync. So in other words, just going back to that, I have campus A, B, and C all in one AD, but I want tenant A, B, and C in the cloud. You can go and set up three different DirSyncs, one for each of those customers or companies, so to speak, from our perspective, and push that into a different tenant in the cloud. So even though you have one AD on-prem, you can have multiple tenancies in the cloud. The key thing there is every object must show up exactly once. Otherwise, you get some weird stuff going. If you think about this, the Jono object, if I was going to be in company A in the cloud, that's where all my usernames are, my email addresses, and all that. The other two companies can't use the same email addresses. So that's why you're going to see some very weird behavior if you have the Jono object in all three. And again, I'll talk a lot more about that this afternoon. The last bullet point here is you can control what objects synchronize. You can't select which attributes synchronize. In other words, you can sync VJ and skip Jono, but you can't say, do not synchronize the mobile phone for VJ and Jono. I'm working on that. I promise you that. The next time I'm here, you will be able to do that. The main thing there is we have so many services built on Windows Azure Active Directory. Exchange, SharePoint, Link, the Office 365 Pro Plus, Intune, and they all kind of need some of everything. And so what I'm working with those teams on right now is saying, look, I need you to tell me what you need to work. And that way, once we have that list, then we can say, oh, well, because you have Exchange but not SharePoint and Link, this is all you need. Oh, you only have Link, so this is what you need. So we're working on that so that we can have that informed conversation to let you know what will break if you don't have this information. And so, like I said, I'm hoping here, in the order of months, to be able to provide that information so you can make those decisions.
So let's stop there and ask, how many of you would like that attribute level filtering? How important is it?
And let me ask just a follow-up question there. How many of you are requiring that because of government regulations? Because there's definitely government and political regulations versus sort of business policies, like we shouldn't, So from a government perspective, so it's kind of protection of, and privacy of your information and users' information that's driving that requirement. And that's definitely why we're doing this, right? We need to make sure we can support you and what you need to do there. So again, I talked about Graph API. PowerShell is also another alternative. Both of these let you manage and create those objects yourself. It's a little more complex because you have to know how to script PowerShell, and you have to know how to write the code to talk to Graph, but it gives you that flexibility. If you want to build it yourself, you can absolutely do that. Multi-forest Active Directory, we talked about this real quick earlier. DirSync is single-forest. It'll only connect to one forest on-premises for now, and it'll push that information up into the cloud. If you have multiple forests on-premises, you need to use what we call the connector, the Azure Active Directory connector for FIM 2010 R2. And yes, it is 2010, funnily enough, R2. And so that's why it's a mouthful. What that does is it gives you the flexibility to figure out and define the rules for how to pull that information from on-prem. You've made those business decisions before for why you have multiple forests, right? So we allow you to configure that, and then we'll say just make it look like a single collection of info, and we'll push it up into the cloud for you. This afternoon, I will dig into that a lot more, like I said, as well as there's a couple scenarios where you do have multiple forests on-premises, but you don't need the connector. You can actually use DirSync. And so I'll talk to those details for sure this afternoon. I'm trying to save you money if I can. There's a multi-forest decision flowchart. I'm going to break it down real simple for you. If you have a single forest, DirSync is your option. That's all you need. If you have multiple forests, for the most part, you're going to want to use FIM plus the connector. Right now, if you have multiple Exchange organizations, we are in a pilot program to support that with the connector. So it's not fully released, not fully available because of the tooling changes we've done. But later this calendar year, we will be supporting multi-AD forest, multi-exchange organization companies. And so if you are actually interested in the connector because you have multiple forests and you have multiple exchange organizations, swing by afterwards. I'm looking for a couple volunteer companies to work with to get that vetted out and tested so we can hit general availability. So please do come up later on and ask that.
So I just wanted to mention that that's one of the models that we've been pushing lately of having these early adopter programs so we can get some customers in, document. We just don't want to release these complex features, get them out there and customers use them and deploy them differently than we've imagined so it works properly.
Absolutely. And one of the things I'm just going to piggyback off of that is these sessions and then the Ask the Experts earlier, the Tech Expo, are super valuable for us, for myself, to get real-world feedback from you, right? So the idea is if there are scenarios that we're not talking about here that you need, I can't promise I'll deliver them, but I really want to understand them. Make sure we understand what the customer patterns are because we've given you software for so long and you've done whatever you need to do to make it work. Right, and so now it's our job to make sure we continue to support you as you move to the cloud. So we take that feedback here figure out how we're going to solve it, run what we call the early adopter programs, or the TAP programs, rather, the technical adoption programs, to test that out with customers and then ship. So please make sure you do ask afterwards, come to the sessions, go to Ask the Experts, and we'll whiteboard out those problems just to make sure I do understand them so we can solve your actual issue as opposed to giving you new software that still doesn't solve what you needed to do. Last thing on the connector is this does support AD and non-AD. So because of the FIM platform supporting things like Lotus and iPlanet directories, you can connect to any of those supported non-AD services to grab that information. And something I've heard actually quite a bit throughout this tech ed and previous tech eds is you want support like DirSync for non-AD directories. So I've taken that feedback. We're trying to figure out what we can do for you guys there to make it easier. And I'll hand this back over to Vijay now.
Okay, federated identity. Again, I want to remind you, this is an overview session, so we'll get into this into a lot more detail this afternoon. So federated identity as opposed to cloud identity or with DirSync and password sync, what this gives you is a more secure way to get a single sign-on. So basically, with ADFS, for example, we work with the AD to authenticate on-prem and then create a SAML token, SAML 1.1 token, and then pass it on to the Azure Active Directory. So the Azure Active Directory can use it to help you get authorization to various different services. So again, identities are mastered on-premises with single point of management. You get all the password policies and everything that you set on the on-prem. That's what's going to be used for your cloud services as well. And of course, it works in conjunction with directory synchronization. If you're using the DirSync or multi-forest synchronization tools. So it's secure, as I said, it's token-based authentication, and it also gives you a couple other options like client access control. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit more detail. And then, of course, strong factor authentication with ADFS. Jono mentioned RSA. We do work with Phone Factor as well. We have an on-prem solution with Phone Factor that you can integrate with your AD, and that will be the point of authentication, second factor authentication. Now, federation options. Just wanted to show you. I think Jono had it in his earlier slide about synchronization option. These are the federation options. These are pretty. If you've noticed, we've opened up many options now based on the complexities of your organization. So what we've learned over the last couple of years of running the services. As the customers are, the larger and larger customers are adopting Office 365, the complexities are definitely increasing because they have different AD, in various types of directory infrastructures or authentication and et cetera, right? So we're trying to open up as many options as possible so we can, whatever you have on-prem, you can come onto the cloud and use our services, right? The first one is, obviously, we've always had this, ADFS. It works with AD. It's our, what we call the Cadillac option. You can use it. You can get things like multi-factor authentication. You get the client access policies, client access control, and things like that, right? And, of course, it enables single sign-on token-based authentication.
And actually, Vijay, I'm going to add one thing to that. ADFS right now is the only single sign-on solution that supports all end-user scenarios. Right. So you're going to notice later on that there are certain drawbacks based on the other providers just because of what they've implemented as interfaces. So I thought I'd add that there.
Thanks for that, Jono. So you get all of the hybrid scenarios and things like that. The second option is third-party SDS. And we've heard from a number of customers that they have non-AD infrastructure. Sometimes in addition to AD, sometimes they don't use AD and they have either Tivoli or Novell Access Manager and things like that, right? They have they're managing their own directories for however long. So we wanted to open this option so you can work with we work with some of these providers. We give them guidance. We help them test with Office 365 and Windows Azure AD so that we can enable federation with these providers. So the whole point is we don't want you to go through all the trouble of replacing your directories and things like that, right? And adopt whatever you have, and then just come on to Windows Azure AD and Office 365 and use our services. In a little bit, I'll share with you some of the partners that we are working with. And if there are others, if we hear from customers that there are others that you want us to work with, we're happy to work with them. Of course, I mean, everything else works like ADFS, and we don't. There are a couple of options that we can enable simply because we don't own those technologies, right? And the third one is Shibboleth or SAML. I mean, how many educational, how many of you are from educational institutions here? Great. As you know, Shibboleth is an open source product. It's very popular in the universities and higher ed education institutions. And in addition to Shibboleth, there are other SAML providers and things like that. Right. So basically, whether you have AD or non-AD, we enable you to federate with Windows Azure AD or Office 365. So this is another thing that we've enabled in the last year or so. Now, one other new option, I should have had this earlier when I said, these are the things that we announced recently. This is another thing. Like, we heard from a number of our customers that, look, I don't want, I like ADFS, I want to implement ADFS, but I don't want to do it on-prem. I'm in a disaster area, zone, or whatever, so I want my users to be able to log in, even though I'm using Federation. I want them to be able to log in even when my on-prem infrastructure may be down or what have you, right? So why don't you just implement ADFS in your cloud? And we own both Azure and Office 365, so why not do it? So what we did was we actually put out a white paper or guidance for our partners to go ahead and do this safely and properly, right? So basically what it is you can have, you can implement AD, ADFS, and DirSync in Azure and replicate your directory on-prem to AD, so you can have all of this infrastructure in Azure and federate with Office 365. This is a great option if, either as a backup for your on-prem ADFS or as the main ADFS. And obviously, it's Azure IaaS is highly available. You're going to get all the goodness that we have with Azure, right? And I have a link here below that gives you the link to the white paper. Okay, works with Office 365. This is a program that we put in place, like I mentioned, when we heard from a number of customers that they're using non-AD directories and identity systems. Right? So basically what we did was we took a different approach than some of our competitors where we just didn't want to put out guidance out there and then have partners integrate and then our customers worry about, hey, if this is supported or not, or what happens when I have problems, right? So we went and worked with some of these partners and had them test in their environments and then brought it into our labs, and we tested some functional scenarios. So when I say supported, it's functional scenarios, right? I mean, these are the scenarios that we know we've tested and it works well and we've verified it, right? That's what we did. And then we also have worked out some sort of coordinated support so that when our customers call, we don't say, hey, just go try them or what have you. We actually hand off to the partners and they do the same thing with us. That's the to give you some more confidence when you're using some of these other partners to work with Office 365. As you can see, we're trying to make it easy for you to come onto the cloud and use our services as much as possible, right? And I also have a link there that I have it in the slide as well. And here are some of the providers that we've worked with already. There's Ping, Optimal, Serify. We've also enabled IBM and NetIQ, et cetera, right? There are some scenarios that are certain scenarios that don't work with some of these providers, and we list this in great detail in the link. Great, client access control. This is the goodness that you get with the ADFS. So basically what you can do is, let's say you have your users working from all over the place, and you don't want them to be you know, logging in directly into your services, right? You want them to go through VPN or what have you. You can prevent them from doing so, but just by you know, using their IP addresses, right? So basically, you can say only if you VPN in, or if you're in your corporate environment, they can log into the services. You can do that using ADFS. Lastly, you know, you can also use Windows Azure Active Directory Identity with other cloud services. This is we've released these Windows Azure AD APIs so that our partners can, or any ISVs out there, can build single sign-on using our identities, right? So, for example, if you have some app that you built in Azure or in another cloud, you can actually have single sign-on using Office 365 or Windows Azure Identity to log into those apps without actually having to use multiple identities and passwords and things like that. Okay? So summarizing, we have plenty of time for questions. We noticed that we had time, so that's why we had to zip through the presentation. We have summarizing, we have cloud identities with Windows Azure Active Directory. If you're a small organization, you want to simplify things, you want to get onto the cloud, that's what we have. We have DirSync from, to synchronize identities from on-premises. Basically, you have same identity, but different passwords to log into the services, on-prem and the cloud. With password sync, as Jano mentioned, you get secure, simple sign-on, if you will, right? And Graph API and PowerShell, we enable you to, build all kinds of synchronization and things like that. And then with Forefront Identity Manager, more of the complex topologies, like whether it's multi-forest AD or non-AD synchronization and things like that. And then we have finally federation or single sign-on with ADFS and other third-party partners using WS Trust or WS Fed. And then, of course, Shibboleth at SAML P. Active authentication for multi-factor, and finally, works with Office 365 program. So this is basically, as you can see, we have tried to open up options as much as possible, at the same time trying to simplify how you can get onto the cloud with whatever infrastructure that you may have. So that was my last slide, and now we can talk more, get into the questions that you may have, and I also refer you to the session later on this afternoon. Yes?
Is there documentation on the directory federation with Azure? So you have Office 365, you're also using Azure infrastructure services, and you want to sync those directories and access.
Do you want me to
So, yeah, I mean, yeah. We can move that. So basically, I just want to say this. It's the same directory, right? Basically, if you are using Office 365, you are using Windows Azure Active Directory. There is no need to synchronize between the two. It is the same platform. It is, if you think about it in terms of layers, it's Windows Azure Active Directory on top of which Office 365 sits. So it's not a different directory. Does it make sense? Absolutely. You're able to log into Windows Azure Active Directory.
Right. So I think I'm understanding one part of the question that is I'm building on a VM on Azure infrastructure as a service, and you want to allow users to log into that VM using an Azure Active Directory? Ah, okay. So that's where we have a little bit of difference. What Vijay said is absolutely true. Azure Active Directory is a platform, a directory platform for Office 365. Yeah, and you can talk to it like you would have with Active Directory. What you're sort of getting at is like a domain join approach, right, where an Azure VM is domain joined to Azure Active Directory. That's currently not supported right now. You can't domain join to Azure Active Directory. What Vijay was getting at, which is a big focus of ours right now, is you could build apps that run in Azure that leverage Active Directory. So in your app, you could build and say, check to see if this user, who, Vijay Kumar at Microsoft.com, is in this tenant. Is his manager, Joe? If so, do something. So you can use that information. But the Azure VMs themselves cannot be domain joined to Azure Active Directory, like a VM in Hyper-V on-prem might be joined to Active Directory. For signing into that Azure VM. And so even if you, because it's either domain joined or sort of a work group, right, with Windows, neither of those right now can leverage the Azure Active Directory stack for a sign into Windows.
Yes. So to repeat the question,
sorry, I didn't catch
the question. Exchange?
Yeah, in Windows 2012 Essentials, you have the integration with Office 365.
Yeah.
And then you have also the identity integration and the policy randomization. I was wondering how is that done?
So with Exchange?
No, Essentials, 2012,
Essentials. Oh, Windows Essentials, sorry. I thought you said Exchange. I was like, there is no Exchange 2012. Yeah. With Windows Essentials 2012.
So the question was,
with Windows Essentials 2012, can you directory synchronous, use these technologies we talked about with Office?
Which technology is used, that's the question. Because it's already in place. If you use a change to support with synchronized
O365,
that works, but I wonder how it
is. So I need to follow up with you offline on that, because I don't know. You said it already comes with the integration.
You have the dashboard, then you say, I have this local user and local ID.
Right.
You want to hook it up to this.
To Office 365. It allows you to create the tenant in the cloud already as part of it.
Yeah. And also, if you already have a tenant, and you upgrade from, let's say, 2003 SVS to
the Essentials 2012. Yeah. Right, so what I do know that the SBS, or now Essential Stack, does is it doesn't actually run dir-sync per se. It's not the same technology that we described here. It gives the same effect where you have users in the cloud. You can actually sign up for a tenant wholly from, I think, Essentials as well, right? Yeah, and so as I understand it, what that technology, the Essentials 2012 server, has done is it actually leverages PowerShell. And so it's, again, it's mimicking what dir-sync would have done. It connects or even creates that tenant for you via a PowerShell. In domain verification, for example, you can add your own domains, right, via Essentials, and that'll show up in Office 365. So it is using our PowerShell interface, which I briefly touched on, to do that creation and management. It's not dir-sync or exactly. So it's doing the equivalent of what dir-sync does. It uses the PowerShell interface. Exactly. And so the specifics beyond that, I'm not entirely sure. It's because it's not dir-sync at that point. If there were particular questions, I know the PM that owns that interface for Essentials, and I can figure out if you had specifics. Yeah. Yeah. Please do. Yeah.
Yes. Right.
But how it works with apps like Outlook? I mean, is only for web apps or even for desktop apps?
No, it's only for web apps today, the first release, right? The what we're previewing right now. It's for web. So basically today what we do is we enable it. That's why we enabled it just for admin accounts. You can log into the web apps. What we essentially do is we block you from using any other once we require you to do multi-factor authentication, just to prevent you another way to get into the environment.
And
so that's what it is. But if you want, like if you do use phone factor with your on-prem ADFS, then you get pretty much everything. By the way, I also want to mention you can use phone factor, which is the company we bought recently. That solution, you can use it on-prem with ADFS or any other identity system that you may have, whether it's Ping or a Novell or one of those two.
The one thing I'll add is, in terms of a strategy, what we're looking to do is eventually, obviously, provide support for things like ActiveSync and all that. As I understand it, this actually came up yesterday or Tuesday as well in the question, is we're going to have these super secure long passwords or something as an interim stopgap for some of those scenarios. But yeah, I mean, the longer term full support for those is eventually coming. As it stands right now, it's pretty much for your web profiles.
Yep. Yes. Okay. So the good thing is we have the program manager that's working on this. So let me repeat the question real quick for the benefit of others.
Yeah.
So basically the gentleman is asking is if they have, let's say, a large organization like 10,000 users, but they only want to synchronize 1,000 users into the cloud. But apparently, we don't support that. We want them to synchronize all of their directories. Yeah.
This means that if I want only part of my IT directory, I can filter user and only 1,000 from 100,000 people, but I have to synchronize all my contacts and all my groups. And I don't understand why.
I think I understand the question. And let me just clarify. So you have X number of users, you only want to sync 1,000. So you can do that today. You're asking for my groups. Are you saying I don't want to synchronize any groups, or I want to select a set of groups to sync?
I want to select.
That's a fair question. So this actually comes down to a platform limitation that we are getting rid of. So in the past, how many folks in here actually are familiar with FIM, the synchronization engine? So for the folks that know that a little bit, in the technology, you can configure objects to synchronize based off of sort of in the UI kind of drop-down approach or in code. You can't do both. And so if you've applied the user filter, you could add a new attribute to filter off of in the UI, right?
We did it technically. My question is, why don't you support it?
Right. So sorry, I'm getting to that right now. So the thing is, groups and contacts are by the code rules. And so what we didn't want to do yet was put customers in a position where they had to understand and replicate what the existing group filtering logic and contact filtering logic was. Because the only way for you to add your own criteria for filter is to stop using our code and then go to a declared via the UI. And so it's actually an option in the UI, I've noticed. It says declared or else the rules. And so what we've done is we've taken that out. We're working with the platform team right now and moving into a place where you can add group filter control and contact filtering in the UI the same way you do for users. So the net is the platform didn't support it before. We're getting that out so that you can go and filter groups and contacts as well. Yeah, I'm hoping by the end of summer. It's a two-part thing where the platform, the sync engine, needs to allow us to do that, and then we're moving on. So we're hoping here by the end of summer. That ask has come up a couple times, and so it's mainly because we didn't want to. You can't replicate everything we do in our code. That's why we have to use code in the rules, and that was the main driver for why we kind of say all groups, all contacts. Did that answer the question? Okay.
Even got a date, so that's something. Yes. Documentation for Office apps on iOS and Android.
Documentation for the ADFS
client rules too.
Right, because right now you have configured to issue deny if it's not one of the supported, and it worked for all the Windows apps, but now you're saying the iOS and the Android, they're always getting denied effectively, and you're asking how do you configure those rules? I don't know that we have. I'd have to follow up. If you want to come up after, I'll make sure we grab that. I don't know that it's on TechNet yet. That they've written that particular focus. Yeah. And I can't speak to whether they have it in the pipeline, so I can follow up, though, and make sure we do get that up there. Yeah.
Yes?
Curious minds. the way that we've actually
Repeat the question, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, right. The question was, how many users are we talking about? How is Azure Active Directory actually built? I think it's kind of a two-part question. Yeah, no, that's a very fair question. So I'll answer the second part first, and then I'll go back to the first one. So the way we built Azure Active Directory, it's not one AD per customer. It would never scale. We would fall over. We run out of data centers. we'd have to start producing our own hardware. So we built it actually on Active Directory itself. So it is not just one. There's multiple because that's how we scale out. But it's not one AD per customer. So it's a very highly scalable instance of Active Directory. And because we need to give you maximal uptime, right? We need to make sure that you're always up, that your Office 365 is always working. There's a lot of replication and backup that we do behind the scenes. But effectively, it's definitely not one AD per customer, but it's more than one AD for all customers. And that's really how we scale
it's
out.
Yeah, multi-tenant platform is
the really And the be. Second question, or the first part of the question you'd ask, you know, is how big, how many? I don't know off the top of my head how many user objects are in AD, our Azure Active Directory, but I can tell you that I believe we did 7 billion authentications last week. So on a weekly basis, we do about 7 billion authentications for active users. Because there's, if you've dersynced and you have 100,000 users, all of them are in Azure AD, right? But if only 100 or 1,000 of them are licensed, the others don't really count. So for the people that are actively using Office 365 and other services, 7 billion authentications last week. And so if you're interested, I can find out. If you swing by the booth tonight, I'll have an answer for you.
Yeah, Office 365 itself has, you know, tens of millions of users. Yeah. All of them are in Active Directory, so Azure Active Directory.
And multi-tenant question to follow up on that one. If you are a hosting provider, you also have normally a shared Active Directory for your customers.
Yeah.
Now the customer takes some services of my hosting provider and takes Office 365. Now you get in the predicament, and I believe there's some solution coming, predicament that cannot be synced, cannot sync multiple Office 365 implementations with your shared Active Directory. Is that going to be solved?
Okay, so I'll repeat the question first to make sure I understood it. So what you're saying is if you're a solution or service provider and you have your own Active Directory which contains multiple of your customers in the same instance, one or more, but not all, want to use Office 365 services, You're asking, how do I pick out that segment and get them into Office 365 so they can use one of the services? That was the question.
Right.
If you have one or more, each of them have their own Office 365. That was the question, right? So there's two ways you can do that. Again, I'll dig into it a lot more this afternoon. But basically, with the FIM connector, the Azure Active Directory connector for FIM 2010 R2. Now I'm warmed up. You can do that where you have a single FIM instance, and then you configure multiple instances of the connector. And then you own that logic again, right, to say, here's where I'm going to pull the information from, and here's how I'm going to push it out. So that's one approach. So, for example, you have that AD on-prem with two tenants. Very simple. I only want one, not two. So A and B. You want A and not B. In that case, you use the FIM connector, and then you simply pull in what you want and push out what you want. And then the pattern applies. If you have A through E, if you want A and E, then you synchronize A and E in and push it out. So that gives you full flexibility. That's probably the best solution for right now for a hosted service provider. If you're your own customer, for example, your own company, like the schools, that's one I often use, right? I have five campuses, only campus 1 and 4 want. Then you may elect to go multiple dersync instances with filtering, just because that's an easier implementation, right? One dersync per tenant. So I will go and I'll grab, you know, campus 1 with one dersync and push that into one tenant. And then campus 4 with another dersync and push it. So it's a simpler implementation. But from a scalable perspective, you'll want to use FIM plus the connector for that, because that gives you full flexibility on what to sync in and what to push out.
And you could also, which normally can in FIM, manipulate the direction of the replication. So which is the master and which is the receiving end?
See, so that's an interesting question. So the way that we've built our sync pipe, if you picture it from on-prem to cloud, there's currently a limited set of things you can pull back down from the cloud. Right, the connector that we provide is the interface from, you're familiar with FIM obviously, right? From the metaverse up into the target. And so we only feed back what you previously pushed up. So in terms of direction of sync, you're right. You could configure FIM to do it, but the Office 365 or Azure AD service APIs don't give you everything back. We only give what's enough to push from on-premises to the cloud. And again, we've heard from a lot of customers, I want to have my users use their SharePoint online my site to manage their thumbnail photo or address, or, you know, that becomes your self-service portal. So we're looking at how we can enable bi-directional synchronization like that, which would then give you the flexibility in FIM to control, push this from, you know, left to right or A to B, whatever you want to call that.
Okay.
Yes.
You're asking all the questions for my session this afternoon.
No,
I will answer. Yeah, okay, that's my hook, right? It's like, if you come this afternoon...
This is just a teaser, by the way.
No, the question, I'll just repeat the question. I'll give you the real quick answer as well, because if you have other sessions you want to go to, you should do that. But the question was, I came from BPOS days, or even Office 365. It doesn't make a difference. You're in the service now. You have a directory on-prem. I haven't been running DuraSync. How do you hook up those objects, right? So you'll see this afternoon, I talk about what's called softmatch. So what DuraSync does is it, before it creates an object in the cloud, it says, do I think this object might already be in, is it already in the cloud? So for example, I'm Bob at Contoso.com. It'll check by email address. So there's a bunch of complex logic, but simplest form, if the primary SMTPs are the same, we'll link them. So to your question then, yeah, exactly. The logic we try to keep fairly consistent. We're looking to add match by user principal name as well, because that's sometimes an easier one. But in general, to the question there, we do try to link based on primary SMTP when you start DuraSync.
So if you have an organization where you use the migration tool and then you didn't change anything,
you should be automatically good to go. Exactly. And you can do a visual if you want, or a script exactly, from Exchange, use PowerShell, get primary, and you should see the lineup. But yes, if you've used our tools, and that's why we designed it that way, you should be able to flip on DuraSync and it will go, I see this object over here, so please connect them. Exactly. It will connect that on-prem object. Correct. The on-premises object is now the master. So there's a caveat there that I call it this afternoon as well. If you have different state between on-prem and the cloud, and you now connect, the on-prem version wins. So just something to note, which is why you want to make sure that you're ready to go. But the connection is automatic. Like, for example, if you had 4 email addresses in the cloud, but 3 on-premises, we will say, I can connect because it's the same email address, and then we'll overwrite what was in the cloud with what's on-premises. You see, so... Exactly. So in the cloud, you now have 3 email addresses after the synchronization happened. So there's a caveat there to make sure you do that analysis first, especially if you've had them separate for a very long time, right? You want to make sure department or whatever information is correct, because on-premises will now overwrite. Exactly.
That's manual?
I'm sorry.
Is that a manual action?
The reconciliation?
Yeah,
the comparison is manual.
Yeah, if there are no further questions, I just want to leave you with how we use ADFS internally, right? I mean, just a simple demonstration. If I log into my Microsoft, account from anywhere, as you can see, this is a PC that's not domain joined or anything like that. I'm redirected to our ADFS page. And you can do the same thing. And once I enter my password here, then I'll be then my AD on-prem will be authenticating me into the Office 365 services, right? So basically, any organization, you can have your own page and things like that. But if your machine is domain joined, automatically you're going to have single sign-on already. Great. With that as the ending note, thank you all for joining. And we'll stick around for
questions. We'll be here for questions.